Well, an hour of phone calls now with William Henry on Coast to Coast AM. William, what fascinated you the most about the Capitol when you were out there?
Oh, gosh, just for the most part, just the entire aura of the place. I mean, it literally radiates this power, and you get a tremendous sense, I'll call it a patriotic feeling that emerges, and that it just becomes a part of you. And I'm just fascinated by that aspect of it. And people, in fact, ask me that all the time. Well, if you're saying this is such a profound spiritual place, how come the people that work there don't behave as such? And well, some do. I mean, there are some really good people that are there, but then there are also some people that seem to be operating on the lower end of the spiritual scale, and it's they who unfortunately tip the place towards the negative or the cynical.
They're on the bottom of the food chain, I think.
They're on the bottom of the food chain.
Let's go to Springfield, Massachusetts. Jack, east of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hey, Jack, go ahead.
How's it going?
Good. All is well.
Great. I have a question concerning the Christ consciousness. The awakening of humanity is amazing. However, there's a darker side of things that isn't being pointed out, and that is the adversary of God. And the adversary of God fell from heaven because he thought he was God. And the apotheosis of man, being like God, well, could it be a setup for humanity from God's adversary?
Well, I mean, nothing is good or ill, but thinking makes it so. And so, if you want to take that sort of, well, what I refer to as, with all due respect, a cynical approach, then you can indeed see it that way. And many people do. And again, I've encountered this in going out and trying to talk about D.C. People are just like, I don't want to hear anything about D.C. That's a den of thieves, that U.S. Capitol. That's a rat's nest in there. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's just back out. Let's take all the people out of there, and let's just talk about what is in there. And personally, do I see it as a setup by some adversary? No, I don't. I see it as a tool that can be used by good-hearted people to ultimately achieve their highest good, and in fact, what you referred to as Christ consciousness.
If you were talking to someone of extreme religious backgrounds, would they accept some of the things you were saying, William, or would they fight this?
Oh, no. They would absolutely fight it. And I have experienced that, but what my job is to do is just to lay out the argument, bulletproof the references, and just show it in a way that is not intended to be offensive, but rather to say this is historical, this is well-referenced, and I don't have an axe to grind here. All I'm trying to do is take a look at this symbolism and this artwork and say this is what it means. Because I well understand, George, that there will be some people that after hearing an interview like this would love nothing more than for those planes that plane that crashed in Pennsylvania to actually hit its target, the dome of the U.S. Capitol. They will seek to rip this artwork out of there because to some people, this is total blasphemy and heresy, what we're describing here.
Yeah, it is. Caroline in Phoenix, west of the Rockies. Hi there, Caroline.
Hello, and this is Phoenix Rising. And
you
everything that... What? And everything that William is saying is absolutely true, and I have beyond that. And who's supposed to be in the Capitol right now as president is Bernard Addington. We went with George Washington in 1732 to Lincoln in 1832, and St. Bernadette Clairvaux in 1132, and Bernard Addington, born in Phoenix, Phoenix Rising, the Resurrection, 1932.
William, do you have any idea what she's saying?
No, I don't. I'm wondering if her chronology might be a little bit off, because Lincoln wasn't elected in 1832, and Washington served at a different date than she indicated as well. So I'm not quite tracking the chronology there, but...
Well, I got to find out. Who's this person, Caroline, you're talking about?
Bernard Addington. He should be in the White House now.
Who is he?
Well, he's the result of revelation. This is Judgment Day.
Where is he?
Combination. He works all over the planet, all over the cosmos in secret until
he's
revealed.
Is he Elvis?
Yes.
He's Elvis.
Is he like?
He's
Elvis.
He's everywhere.
William.
He is. He's all over the cosmos.
Is he the Maitreya?
No. It's a combination of King Solomon, Jesus, and this is the end times. You looked at Revelation 20:12.
Yes.
And beyond that, we are Revelation 21.
So where do we find this Bernard Addington?
Well, he's running around, and I have to capture him and get him out in the public arena. We're going to do, I'm in Phoenix with the Walter Cronkite Center and PBS, and we hope to get, I've been trying to get my book out, but it's been delayed because of blockages. The book is called The History of the Mysteries, The Romance of the Ages.
All right, well, good luck on the book, and I've never heard of this guy, William.
I haven't either, but it sounds fascinating, and best of luck with the book.
Let's go to Eddie in California, first-time caller. Eddie, you're on with William Henry on Coast to Coast. Hi, Eddie.
Thank you, gentlemen. My question is, we keep hearing about 2012. We went from the Julian calendar of perfect 360 to the Gregorian calendar of the Vatican. If 2012, wouldn't that be updated since there's more days? Aren't we closer to that then?
Yes, that is one of the arguments that's put forth, is that we actually experienced what we think of as 2012 sometime back in the 1990s. And so it's kind of fascinating to contemplate that. But I also kind of, we went through the same kind of conversation back at the turn of the millennium from 2000 to 2001. And my basic take on it, just trying to keep it simple, is that 2012 is the year that we all agree on is 2012, which is 2 years from now, approximately. So I'm thinking that 2012 is the year 2012 that's still sometime in the future.
Do you think the Freemasons are getting a bum rap from some?
Oh, I think now they're getting a nice PR makeover by Dan Brown. He treated them with kid gloves, and now they're getting a chance to kind of come out and talk. But in the past, yeah, most certainly, they've been kind of the pinata in a way for various people. And so it's nice to see that they're kind of getting an opportunity to kind of express a different viewpoint. So they've been around a long time. They certainly have a storied history. I remember our friend Sir Lawrence Gardner saying that the great secret of the Freemasons is that they don't have any secrets. So, it's not something I've really paid tremendous amount of attention to. I try to do my own research, get on the ground, and see things for myself. I'm not a joiner. I'm not a Freemason. I'm not part of the New World Order. I'm not a Bilderberger. Nowhere will I ever be.
You took the road less traveled by, William.
I took the road less traveled, and it took me to the door to Freedom's Gate, and I'm very happy about that.
Let's go to Gardner, Massachusetts. Leo is there. Hey, Leo, go ahead.
Hi, George and William. First of all, Ray C. from WEIM in Fitchburg told me to say hi to you.
Oh, super.
I think you might know him from a few years back.
That's a long time. You know, my mother was born there.
Yeah, I know. I've been listening to your show since you've been on.
Okay.
Anyway, I must agree with William about the pineal gland. I've been practicing yoga with a great master for about 20 years. And I was wondering if he was aware that in Raja Yoga, the pineal gland is known as the Agnya Chakra,
mm-hmm.
or the third eye. And,
yes. Correct.
And when you achieve oneness, you experience the all-seeing eye, because one of the things that you open up is access to clairvoyance when you hit that oneness spot. Anyway, and also the light body, The Raja Yoga practice for that is called Laya Yoga?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. Well, you seem to be up on all of it.
He's good. He's good on that, Leo.
Also, I found a symbol in Washington right next to the Hirshhorn Museum.
Okay.
That big round building.
Mm-hmm.
On the side facing the dome is this tensegric it's easy for me to say, sculpture.
Uh-huh.
That it's stainless steel wire and pipes that raise up out of the ground into the sky, and it looks like it couldn't possibly stand up by itself. And if you step into the middle of it and look up into the sky, you will see an eight-pointed star that spirals up into infinity, and it's known as the Sri Yantra.
Incredible.
Which
I haven't seen that.
People can experience that when they hit the vibrational state and the spinal column fluid vibrates and it makes the sound of Om.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the sound of Om looks like. If you take filings and put them on a plate above a speaker and say Om, it will make the Sri Yantra.
Fantastic.
And this is one of the symbols that's sitting outside there. It freaked me out when I looked up at it. Went, hey.
I will check that out. I'll be back in the federal district soon. And, in fact, that's one of the things that we encourage. I have T-shirts made up that are available on my site, williamhenry.net, that have the dome of the Capitol, and the slogan is, Om the Dome.
Maybe you can also say, Om my God.
Om my God.
There you go. You going back to Egypt at all?
I'm going back January 17th through February 1. We're loaded up and going, and anybody that wants to join, I've got information about Stargate Egypt 4 on my website.
Ooh, that's tempting. That's tempting.
Going to be a good one. Can't wait.
Whereabouts are you going to be?
Oh, we're going to do the Great Pyramid, of course, where then we're going to do the Nile cruise, where we go to Luxor and Dendera and my favorite, Abydos. And then back up to Giza, where we'll have private time in the Great Pyramid and also between the paws of the Sphinx.
Is Zahi Hawass aware of this, or is he helping you out?
Okay. Oh, yeah, absolutely. He and my tour partner, Mary Lamondo, who's an Egyptologist, they go way back. They're good friends, and he opens a lot of doors for us. He's very kind to us, actually.
Okay. Let's go to Judy in Houston, Texas. Hello, Judy.
Hi. Hi, George and William. Thank you so much for such a wonderful program.
Thank you.
I think that you've really, in my mind, and probably a lot of others, have really hit the nail on the head as far as absolution, that the Day of Judgment is so close. And in spite of good works, or I shouldn't say good works, but in spite of maybe not making money for good works, I think it's wonderful that... You know, when you had mentioned about the heart being as light as a feather.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember the passage in the Bible, even the richest man will not be able to pass through the eye of the needle.
That's right.
In the back of a camel.
Yeah.
And then the ultimate, the meek shall inherit the earth. And it almost makes me excited about December 12th. All right,
well,
21st, sorry. I really think it's fantastic, the gift you're giving us.
Well, thank you. And it gets me excited, too. And in fact, that is the connection that I make in my Revelation 2012 presentation, is that this is a time when we have the opportunity to become light as a feather and perhaps even to achieve the light body. And you're right. The statement that goes along with it is Jesus' statement on the impossible, that it's hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And he says it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of the needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And I like to, you know, half-heartedly joke that since nobody has any money anymore, that this is actually, you know, the economic downturn has served us because it's forced us to look to other areas for fulfillment. And you're right. This is what this time is about. It's about, as Jesus tells the rich man, it's time to follow the commandments, which are love your neighbor as yourself and do unto others as you would have done unto you. That is the simple message of 2012. This is how we will ride through Stargate 2012, is by going into the heart, lightening the load, and by doing unto others as we would have done to ourselves, and loving our neighbor as ourselves. This is the whole message of 2012.
Let's go to Alexandria, Louisiana. Cornelius, it's your turn. Hey, Cornelius, welcome back.
Hey, George, you remember me. God bless you, son. And Mr. Henry, God bless you. And Gina, your call screener. Y'all got the greatest show, that talk show.
Well, as the Ringling Brothers used to say, the greatest show on earth.
There you go, George. I just wanted to talk about Jordan Maxwell, and in a way, he's right to be a little scared, because like this New World Order and stuff. And
yeah, he is. He's petrified. He's told me privately, and he said on this program he's scared.
And that's why I guess he won't come on too much. But gentlemen, you know, we just need to pray and stuff. And just like Henry was saying, try to get together ourselves. And I don't know if y'all ever watched Glenn Beck, too, but he's been riding them about different things to these czars and stuff. So it's coming down the pike.
My buddy Glenn Beck, he made the cover of Time magazine.
Yeah. George, God bless y'all, and y'all have a nice evening, all right?
All right.
George, you and I and Glenn Beck and Mark Gray, we need to take a tour of the Capitol together.
I'm not sure I want to go with Glenn.
Well, he goes nuts for the symbolism. He's a maniac with symbolism and understanding it and decoding buildings. He's great at it, and he would love all this symbolism in the Capitol, and he would get it too.
You know, personally, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. You know, his style is what's working right now. You know, his second highest rated show on Fox News. And he just, you know, came from nothing. His CNN show was just floating around. But then when he went to Fox News and he kicked it in high gear, mm-hmm. he took off like a rocket ship. And, yeah. you know, you don't have to agree with his views or his politics. I'm not talking about that right now. I'm talking about his sheer ability to generate an audience is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and I do. I appreciate his takes. I mean, I caught him recently when he took apart 30 Rock. And he was talking my language then, because he's saying, you know, look at the symbolism on this building. You pass by it every day, but you don't know what it means. And let me tell you what this symbolism means. And I really appreciated when he did that, because that is so much of what I try to do, is to get people to just, in a way, wake up. I mean, we see this symbolism every single day. Every day on the news, on Fox, CNN, doesn't matter what channel you watch, you will see the dome of the U.S. Capitol. And it would be frightening to me to watch Jay Leno do a jaywalking in D.C. and ask people to name the Capitol Dome, because I would be concerned that many people couldn't.
Is it not the dome that Al-Qaeda targeted as one of their targets?
Yes,
because they
is.
Wanted that symbolism taken down.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it just terrifies me to think that we could have lost this temple on that day. I mean, we suffered enough losses that day, but to think that on top of that, we could have lost the dome of the U.S. Capitol and the apotheosis, it would have been a tragedy far beyond anything I can imagine. And I think about it, it's like, well, wait a minute. The dome of the U.S. Capitol could, in fact, if our theory is correct and the artwork supports it, the design of the Capitol supports it, that it is, in fact, modeled after the Dome of the Rock, which is sacred to Muslims. So, in fact, if Al-Qaeda had destroyed the United States Capitol, it would have been destroying a model of its most sacred shrine. What idiots.
If the New World Order was involved with Al-Qaeda, would they want to see that dome down?
If they know what I know, absolutely not. It would be hands off, because this is a sacred place. So that's my take on it.
It's like a church.
It's a temple.
Yep.
It did function as a church, though, George. Actually, before it was used by Congress, it was used as a church.
Yeah, that's true. That's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Fort Myers, we go, Florida. Now we're not going to have time for another call. We're going to have to wait until the break. William Henry, once again, would you please tell me about your Joshua Tree event with Whitley Strieber?
This is the Dreamland Stargate experience. It's at Joshua Tree. I have information available on my website, williamhenry.net. The dates are October 16th through the 18th. This is the time when Whitley Strieber rolls it out. We did one of these events in Nashville back in the summer, and people will never forget his presentation there, and I know it will be the same at Joshua Tree.
Super. We'll be back with final phone calls with William Henry in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Joshua P. Warren joins us with his paranormal moment, and we'll be talking about the five scariest cryptids on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, final phone calls with William Henry right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we go. Final phone calls with William Henry right here on Coast to Coast. And we'll pick it up by going to Eric in Fort Myers, Florida. Eric, you're on.
George, and hi, William.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, you guys got a tremendous show tonight. Just very great.
Thank you.
And my question was, let me ask you this first, William. Are you familiar with the work of the late Terrence McKenna?
Oh, of course.
Oh, great. I was wondering, do you think that the Stargate or at the apotheosis, the higher consciousness, if you will, that you get when you are in presence there? Excuse me, I'm a little bit nervous. Do you think that you could maybe achieve this by taking DMT?
Well, that's a phenomenal question, Eric. And in fact, I addressed this in my presentation, Morph, the light body, Secret of Light Body Activation. And I quoted Mr. McKenna because he described an experience once while smoking DMT where a purple substance oozed out of his body that he thought was akin to space-time itself and was actually capable of opening up doorways into other dimensions. And what I said was, isn't it fascinating that when you see Jesus in his ascended form, he's sometimes portrayed wearing a purple robe. George Washington, sitting on the rainbow in the apotheosis, has a purple blanket around him. And I look at that and I think, could it be possible that this is symbolic of this light body, of this space-time substance that's thought of as purple that can ooze out of our body, that our body is capable of manufacturing? And it sounds out there, but McKenna says that this is the substance that can metamorphose our bodies into light. And so I'm very fascinated by it, and I'm equally fascinated by it because the Egyptians said the same thing. They also described a substance that is produced by our body that may be equated with space-time itself that forms the light body and enables us to transform ourselves into Stargate-traveling time travelers.
Okay, next up, thank you, by the way, Frank in Nashville, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, George and William. I was wondering if William would be so kind as to tell the Coast to Coast listeners about the sacred places here in Nashville, because I tell you, I spoke with Zahi Hawass once myself when he was in Nashville. I asked him, I said, did you get a chance to go to the Parthenon? And he had no idea what we have here in Nashville.
Yeah, that's a fact. Nashville has copies of two healing temples from the ancient world, Athena's temple known as the Parthenon, which was a temple of wisdom, and which is complete with the tallest indoor statue in the Western world, a 42-foot tall statue of Pallas Athena, completely covered in 24-karat gold. And then we have a place that I call Stargate Park, better known as Bicentennial Capitol Mall, or excuse me, the Bicentennial State Capitol Mall, which is a 2,200-foot-long magician's rod that is laid out and growing. It's a living temple on 19 acres at the base of our state capitol. And this was kind of the place that I began really cutting teeth on my understanding of these gateways, because this Stargate Park in particular not only is a model of our chakras or energy centers, but it also uses Egyptian technology, it turns out, that they utilize to create these gateways. So it's a phenomenal place. I lead people on tours of that place, and in fact have written about it on my website.
The center of the courtyard of the three stars on the metal rod, the acoustic, the psychoacoustic effect between all the standing stones is, like you had said in your website, I went down there and did it and spoke, and you could hear the echo. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal technology. In fact, I was in Ireland in August and went over there to study the high crosses, the round towers or the high towers, and then the stone circles, and knowing that the idea is that they would construct these stone circles knowing that the stones themselves held tremendous frequency or energy, more than the human body can hold. And the idea is that when they would put people in a circle such as this, well, let's think about when Elijah ascended into the heavens in a whirlwind, a vortex, what we think of today as a Stargate. He did so at a place called Gilgal, which was a circle of stones. And the idea is that people would gather in these stone circles, they would stand on those stones, probably use chanting or drums to raise their frequency as well as get those stones ringing, and then here's the magic. Every person in that circle would raise their energy, and each individual would experience the collective energy of all of the persons that were there. And then presumably the one person in the middle, in this example, Elijah, would benefit from all of that energy. And this may be the way that they conducted themselves or translated themselves through this whirlwind of energy. It's a phenomenal concept, and I can see how it might have worked, and it's something I'm still pursuing.
Okay, Britt. Moreno Valley, California, we have Dino's turn. Hey, Dino.
Hey, actually, it's Dino, George.
Dino, okay.
Yeah, sorry. I had a question. I was wondering if, since there's a lot of history in the masonry, the masons in the Capitol building and the symbolism, yes? Is there any correlation between the symbolism in the Capitol and the symbolism that's regularly found in tarot, which historically has also been a Masonic tool?
No. I mean, they're really, no. I haven't seen that. And I've been reading tarot for over 15 years, and I don't see direct correspondences, but I tell you, I will be on the lookout next time to look for that. But off the top of my head, as I'm scanning the Capitol right now, no, I can't give you any examples of that directly.
All righty. Well, thank you very much. I'm new at it myself, and I was just wondering, because I know that it has had its roots in Masonic rituals.
I didn't know if it
would have been put over.
Yeah, the tarot is considered the little book, the book of secrets, and so those symbols may likely be there, but I just haven't looked at the Capitol through that lens yet.
Okay, let's go to Arkansas now. It's Linda's turn. Hey, Linda.
Hi. I was wanted to know if your narrator knew anything about the Guardian of the Holy Grail that was supposed to have been taken over by the Knights of the Templar during the plunge of Jerusalem, when they took over the shroud. And,
well, let's ask him. Are you familiar with that at all, William?
Well, I've done extensive research on the Holy Grail and the possibility that the shroud itself is the Grail, the shroud being the only known relic of an individual who has transformed themselves into a being of light. I mean, that's the reigning theory right now. It seems that whoever created that shroud, it was created through a millisecond, a burst of coherent light that enabled that person to beam themselves through that shroud. And the ultimate question is, well, how do you do that? Because some people say that's actually impossible. But what I'm trying to do is look at it from the perspective of modern genetics, modern neuroscience, modern spirituality, to take a look and see, well, how could this have actually been done? And that would, in effect, be the Holy Grail. And the Templars definitely were the guardians of that secret.
You know what's so funny about these symbols, William, and not just with the dome, but all over the place? They're right under our nose, yet so many of us don't see it.
That's right. And again, that's what I've tried to explain or explore with people and show, and that's why I mentioned a moment ago, I so applaud Glenn Beck and his effort to get people to see this, because once you see it, it really is a whole nother language, and yet it's a language that is the language of the spirit, literally. And once we learn to decode these symbols, you can go into any culture and read them like books once you have the language of symbols. And I'm just constantly on a quest to understand symbols and to encourage other people to wake up and start learning about them themselves.
We have Edward in Mesa, Arizona. Go ahead, Edward.
Hey, George and William James, it is?
William Henry, actually.
William Henry,
I'm sorry.
Unless his middle name is James, but I don't know if it is.
After listening
it's
to you, I'm going to put you right up alongside of Richard C. Hoagland, whom I have more respect for than most of the guests that have ever been on here. And my question is, number one, we're all aware that up until President Kennedy, every prior president was a Mason. Is Obama a Mason, number one? And number two, I wonder how many of our senators and congressmen are Masons. And the pineal gland is mentioned both by Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, who refers to that as in contact with the super subconsciousness of the universe, and Shirley MacLaine's Out on a Limb. What do you know about that?
Well, my hope is that Mr. Obama, if not a Mason, he is then perhaps a master of the craft. And by that I mean I hope that he is on the path toward crafting his own light body and purifying his own heart, enlightening his own heart, because if he can do that, then he will certainly fulfill the expectations that are set forth and will truly become the model that many hope he will be for the future. And so I have no direct evidence that he is a Mason, that he is a member of any of these esoteric brotherhoods, but I do hope that he's on the path.
Okay, we go to Simi Valley now for Profit. Go ahead there.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'd like to talk about the correlation between Einstein's theory of relativity, which basically correlates to the fact that we came from it, the infinite totality, and the concept of enlightenment, E being the enlightening process, being created by massing together. The critical mass, as was mentioned, with the groups of people gathering together mm-hmm. in one place at one time, and oming all at the same time, having a om consciousness, and mm-hmm. and then squaring the speed of light, which can be done by opening up the third eye and turning it to a reflective creator-creation Brahman realization of the total enlightened consciousness, and reaching the vibrational level, which was prophesied by the Tutankhamun prophecy of 15 times the vibrational level that we are at now, and turning into pure light energy by forming an at-om-I-C, which is an atomic nuclear vision, a nuclear reaction.
All right, do we have a question here, Prophet?
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, are you familiar with the correlation between Einstein's theory of relativity, which basically shows us the enlightening process and allows a group of conscious individuals to mass together, om at one time, reflect the energy off the sun, which is a solar power, which we all came from, and square the speed of light, reflect this energy back up, say, around Woodstock, Ontario, which is surrounded by...
Prophet, I don't see a question here. Do you, William?
Well, he asked if I was familiar with it, and the answer is, in aspects of it, yes. And this is why we whittled down the whole process here to a T-shirt slogan, Om the Dome. And that encapsulates much of the process that he described, although his detail is very fascinating. He's obviously a master of this high-energy physics, and this is where we're going. And, you know, George, when 2012 happens, what that gentleman was just describing, that'll be kindergarten-type knowledge right there. That's the flip that we're talking about.
And these symbols are worldwide as
well.
They're
worldwide, absolutely. They're in every culture, every civilization. I've promised this before. I'm going to get back on it. The first book I wrote was called Junior Cosmic Egg, the story of a cosmic egg named Junior who wanted to grow up to become his own universe. And how did he do it? Well, he had to go learn the language of symbolism. And it's been one of my goals to create Junior's Cosmic Kindergarten, which goes around the world and teaches children the interconnectedness of all of the symbols and, in fact, the cultures throughout the world. Because I believe that if children around the world learn the language of symbolism, they will be able to communicate at a much higher level. Language is very limited. Symbolism, however, is unlimited. And if we can get children learning the language of symbolism, I believe that it will trigger this higher consciousness and promote global unity.
Don't want to be rude, but when you're on, don't give us a five-minute dissertation. Have your question ready for William Henry. Let's go to Salem, Oregon. Don, go ahead. You're on with us. Go ahead, Don.
Hi, guys. No dissertation.
No, sir.
William, I want to ask you a straightforward question. Why is it that religious people and politicians, they seem to separate us more by their side being right, that side being wrong, the other side being right, the other side being wrong? Explain that to me, would you? I'll jump off and listen off the air. And thanks, George. Thanks, William.
Thank you. I think it's just the nature of the matrix, really. Think of the checkerboard. Everything's got to be either black or white. There's got to be a winner and a loser. That's the illusion of this world that we're in. And what this is all about is learning how to transcend the game. Remember, what was that movie where the ultimate message was, don't play the game?
It was called The Game.
Is that what it was called? I just remember Matthew Broderick was in it. What was the title?
I think it was called The Game, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And so that's the message here, is that we are in this illusory matrix that we think there has to be a winner and loser. We think everything is black and white, right, wrong, but it's not necessarily that way. And the object is to become a player, a true player, And that's why I see value in studying the U.S. Capitol, studying the symbolism of the Vatican, because these are the game pieces, and the players know the secrets of these game pieces. They know how to move these pieces around the checkerboard. And if you can learn those tips and techniques of the game, you will become a player yourself, and ultimately you're going to learn, I'm just going to leave. Games are for kids, and I really want to become more of an adult. I'm just not going to play the game anymore.
Hugh in North Carolina. Go ahead, Hugh.
Yeah, good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
I was going to ask Mr. Henry about the statue on the Capitol. I'm a sculptor and I study sacred geometry and enjoy Bernini's work. But have you heard of any other name called for it or that would be used for it? Besides the Freedom or Lady Freedom?
No, I've always understood that it's referred to as Freedom.
Okay. I heard it was Persephone.
But... Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, now that I think about it, some have called it Persephone before, yeah, based on the symbolism that's there.
Right. I didn't know if it was a I enjoy – I have a bunch of friends and family members that are Freemasons, and I like them a lot, but – And I don't think they're all evil or whatever, you know.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I was just wanting to get your take on that.
Yeah, Thomas Crawford was the sculptor. It was sculpted in 1857, and she's very interesting. She's got pomegranates on her robe. She's got a star crown, and she has this eagle morphing from the top of her head. And what's fascinating about that, George, is that this is how the Anunnaki gods were portrayed, with these eagle heads. And it's very fascinating. I mean, literally, the talons of the eagle become her earrings. And so she is, in a sense, the eagle goddess. And the eagle beings, again, we always have to go back and ask, what was the original inspiration for any eagle beings? It's the Anunnaki. And especially with this amazing star crown that she wears, that's, in my opinion, always symbolic of star consciousness, of an awakened consciousness. And that's what Freedom has ultimately achieved. In Brumidi's painting, interestingly enough, he shows her wearing, she has her breastplate of righteousness, she holds her sword of truth, she holds her shield of God, she's got her crown of righteousness on, and I bet she's wearing her sandals of peace. These are the garments worn by all angelic warriors in the Book of Ephesians. She's our defender of freedom. This is a spiritual battle we're all involved in.
Good job, William Henry. We'll be back in a moment with Joshua Warren and his paranormal moment on Coast to Coast AM.